If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Amateur Traveler, episode 575. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about mosques and Byzantine churches, hikes and shepherd's huts, bunkers and bunker art, as we go to the country of Albania. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. We're revisiting a destination we've talked about, oh, maybe 10 years ago on Amateur Traveler, but a destination that has changed a lot in the meantime. So now let's talk about Albania. I'd like to welcome to the show Dina Rabiner from Brooklyn, who has come to talk to us not about Brooklyn, but about Albania. Dina, welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be here.
And Dina's a regular listener to the show, and I like that when somebody knows how this works. Dina, what is your connection with Albania? Why are we talking about Albania?
My first introduction to Albania was when I was a Peace Corps volunteer. I was part of the first group of Peace Corps volunteers to be in the country, and that was in 1992, right when Albania was kind of emerging from a period of not communism, but really Stalinism. And so we were a group of 20 volunteers that were chosen to work in the country.
When we say Stalinism, we're talking about a country that was very isolated at the time, not just from the West, but from everybody.
Yes, extremely. They had been under the dictatorship of Enver Hoxha. Enver Hoxha had died in the 80s, and then there was another leader. But I think it was about 2 or 3 months before I was supposed to go, they had their first elections. And even after I had known I was going to Albania, we didn't know if we would actually get there because no one knew what the result of the elections would be. So once I had actually arrived, it was in June of 1992.
Excellent. Now we're not going to be focusing as much on that as we will on your recent trip because you've recently been back to Albania.
Yes, I was just there at the end of June and the beginning of July of this year.
And this year is 2017, for those of you listening in the future. Well, everybody's listening in the future, but people listening further in the future.
Correct. And what was also exciting was that not only was I going back to visit, but I was taking my family, who had never been there, my husband and my 2 children, who were 10 and 12. So it was a family trip to Albania. And as many people said, we said we were going, why Albania?
Well, that's a great question. That would be my next question. So what did you tell them?
Albania is a beautiful country. I mean, it's a very small country, and a lot of people equate it to the size of Maryland, but it's just chock full of natural beauty, of history, both its more recent communist history, but also the history from Turkish occupation, from the Byzantine era. It just goes back, and there's artifacts from all of those times, from everyone that has kind of passed through the country. They left something there. You can travel the whole country within a week or a week and a half, as we did, and really see a real range of natural beauty, history, and then the people are just incredibly welcoming as well.
Okay, well, let's put it on a map. We're talking about a country that's on the Adriatic coast next to Greece, Macedonia, Montenegro, and either Kosovo or Serbia, depending on whether you consider Kosovo a country.
Right. It's basically right across from Italy. Mm-hmm. If you were to take a boat, there used to be a boat from Bari to Durres, which is the port, and it was about a four-hour boat ride. It's on the Balkan Peninsula. And it actually covers not only the Adriatic, but also in the south, the Ionian Sea.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure exactly where the borders are for that. What would you recommend for, say, a one-week itinerary in Albania?
You will fly into Tirana. Tirana has the only international airport, and it's a brand new airport, very efficient and modern and much faster than, say, going through Kennedy, which is here in New York. I mean, seriously, I mean, just...
No, I don't doubt you at all. Kennedy is not one of my favorite airports.
No. Everything is new. Everyone speaks English. The signs are in English and Albanian, so you never feel lost. There's taxis, and you, depending if you're at different hotels, they can pick you up. And the airport's only about half an hour from Tirana. And Tirana is the capital, so that's where the major museums are, the government buildings. And Tirana is worth exploring. You could spend probably one or two.
You say that somewhat half-heartedly.
No, I mean, Tirana is interesting. I mean, it's a city. It's not as urban as like New York City, but it is a city, but it's very manageable. It's a very walkable city. And it's like when we were there, it was actually quite hot. You can also really hop in a taxi. There's taxis everywhere. But there's some important points to see or sites to see in Tirana. What's interesting is that a lot of the new museums or new points are something related to communist times. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I was there, people still had all of those communist artifacts, or people were still kept it a little close to the breast in terms of experiences and all of that. And when we were there, there was a museum that actually had just opened, I think a week or two before, in Albanian. It's called Shtëpia Gjethit, which is the House of Leaves. And that was basically where all of the spying and intelligence activities took place. And it was a place where Albanians knew there was something going on there, but no one ever knew exactly what happened in that house. It was just recently opened up to the public, and it gives you everything about the extent to which the spying took place, the bugs. It talked about all of the political prisoners that were, people who were political prisoners were basically sent into exile within the country. They were sent to remote parts, and what happened to those people. And it's in English as well as Albanian. There's a lot of footage and documentation, so it's very accessible to foreign tourists. There's also another museum which is interesting called Bunk Art, and there's actually two of them. Because Albania, I don't know if you know, but is basically covered with bunkers, although there seemed a lot less than from when I remember. Mm-hmm. But they've taken the opportunity to let you inside some of these giant bunker, where you go down and you see rooms and rooms where people slept and where they had their meetings and their dining facilities, and then all of the spying that took place and that whole part of their history. So it was interesting because we went with an Albanian to both of those museums, and they found it interesting because these were things they thought was happening, but they didn't know for sure. Mm-hmm. It was educational for Albanians as well as for foreigners. Those are relatively new. There's also the National Museum there and the main mosque. What we always find to be interesting to do is just walking around the city and seeing what the life is like, going to the market, just seeing where you wind up, getting lost along the streets. I mean, it's a pretty safe city, and even if you are lost, somebody will help you.
And you said going to a market. Is there a particular market that you would recommend, and what would I see there?
Well, it's the main food market, okay. And it's called Bazar Idi, which is called New Market, even mm-hmm. though it's not a new market. It's been modernized, if you will. It has now a covering and just more organized. And you just see, you know, people are selling fruits and vegetables. But at the same time, they're also selling a lot of these communist mementos from the time, old watches, pins, telephones, just things that date back to the 50s, the 40s, the 60s, and that have communist stars, old currency. So there's also kind of interesting little tidbits that you can find in the market apart from obviously fresh fruit and vegetables. One thing that's really nice is what they've painted some of the buildings with some of the traditional textile designs. So it's also very colorful.
When you mentioned the main mosque, and unlike some of the other countries in the region, we're talking about a country that is, even though it's coming out of communism, predominantly Muslim. I think in the 2011 census, I read that over 50% of people identify as being Muslim.
Right. I mean, I think technically people are Muslim. You know, they used to say we're European Muslims. People drink, people are not covered. It's something people identify with as, yes, I'm Muslim, but it's not necessarily practiced, at least especially in Tirana. Mm-hmm. When you get out to the smaller villages and countryside, you might find areas that are more conservative, but it's still a very European Muslim. Although when we were in Tirana, they are building a huge new mosque mm-hmm. in Tirana. So I don't know if that will have an impact. I mean, there's been money that has come in from different Muslim organizations, just as there's been money from Christian organizations.
Well, and we should also mention that probably the best known Albanian who died relatively recently is Mother Teresa.
Correct. Correct.
Excellent. Where are we going next?
What we did, we actually rented a car, which made it a little bit easier. But there's also a lot of tour companies around. But you can go about half an hour outside, or maybe an hour outside of Tirana, is a city called Kruja. And Kruja is where their national hero Skenderbeg was from and fought off the Turks. And there's a museum dedicated to Skenderbeg. Looks, and it's an old castle. It's worth visiting. It's interesting just to see and to give you some context of the history. As you approach the castle, there's a lot of stalls, kind of like a marketplace for artisan items and mementos. And I would say, considering we've traveled around the whole country, I think the best are really there, more so than even you find in Tirana. It's interesting to see all of these items that there's some communist memorabilia, but then there's other artisan items that you can see or purchase if you like. But Kruja is interesting and it's an easy trip. There's also an easy trip to do, which we didn't do on this time, which is there are cable cars you can take from Tirana that go up to Mount Deity, which kind of give you an overview of the city. You can have lunch up there. It's an easy half-day trip. I definitely recommend either renting a car or going on some type of tour to go to the north, which one of the areas that we visited was the Valbona River Valley, which when there was everything happening with Kosovo was really not accessible. It takes a while to get there, but it is quite accessible and it's just breathtaking and stunning. It's in the what they call the Accursed Mountains, and there's a car ferry that you can take or regular ferry, and you take about a 3-hour ferry ride through the Lake Koman River is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And so you take this long ferry ride to get to the other side, and then you drive from there to Valbona, which is about, I think it was about an hour and a half or so. So it's a little bit of a trek, but once you get there, you feel like you've escaped the world, and you're down in a river valley surrounded by mountains and just natural beauty. And there's lots of hikes that you can take. Mm-hmm. It's very popular with hikers. You do find a lot of European tourists there, You don't find any Americans. We were the only Americans wherever we traveled, unless they're Albanian Americans. But if you like to hike, there's some fantastic hikes that you can take. We're not really a family of hikers, of serious hikers, but we like to take like a daily hike here and there. And we stayed, there's actually an American woman from Brooklyn who went there on vacation, I think about 9 years ago, and made it her home there. She settled there and she helps run these two guest houses in the area. She's also helped develop all these hiking trails that you can take with trailheads and markers and maps that you can get. And she's trying to basically map out a whole network of hikes that people can go on to preserve the valley as well as enjoy it for what it has.
Well, if anybody is a serious hiker, I should mention that we have previously done an episode about hiking in Albania with Dan and Audrey of Uncornered Market, about the peaks of the Balkans, which was a hike through Kosovo, Montenegro, and Albania.
Right. I mean, we considered, well, there is supposedly this wonderful hike from Valbona to Theth, which is popular, and we considered it. When we were looking into it, we would have had to hire two donkeys and a guide and with two children to hike for at least a day. It just seemed a little too much for us, at least. The hike to Theth is also supposed to be breathtaking. It just didn't work with our itinerary because we had the car. And so then we would have had to then hike back.
Right.
But you can do that route. You don't have to be a serious hiker to do that route. You just have to have hiking boots and equipment and all that. I definitely recommend the north. Everybody enjoyed that. The people are just so friendly and welcoming.
When you say the people are so friendly and welcoming, was that your experience when you were first there and it was just opening up, or has it changed?
Both times. I mean, okay. Both times. I mean, the difference now is that people also speak English. So I speak Albanian, but my family doesn't. So they can communicate, and people also wanted to teach my kids Albanian, so they were picking up words within a week. They had a huge vocabulary.
Wow.
Also traveling with kids. I mean, people love children. I mean, people are always giving them things or giving them a piece of fruit or showing them something special. It made it unique than just being a tourist in X country.
Okay. Where did you go from there?
We actually had to go. We went through Kosovo. We passed through the border, which was really like going through a toll booth, into Jakov. And then we went to Prizren. We had lunch in Prizren and then came back through the Albanian border. And we drove to Durrës. And Durrës is the other side of the country. I mean, the country is really small. So to get from Valbona, which is in the northeast, back to Durrës, which is on the coast on the west, if you didn't stop, I think it takes about 6 hours, but it took us about a day. The highways are, it's all modern highways.
Well, and it's a very mountainous country too, so I'm not assuming you're going straight.
Yeah, you're always going up or down, but quality of the roads is quite good. I mean, there are areas where the roads are a little, you know, bumpier, but still it's very easy road travel. There's steep peaks because you're going through the mountains, but as long as you're fine driving on those types of roads, you'll be fine. And we got to Durrës, and Durrës is the beach, and we stayed along the beach. We actually didn't go into the city of Durrës. We stayed along where most of the beach hotels are, and it was nice. It was a nice place to rest, and there's tons of hotels. There's restaurants. It's all very organized, where with your hotel comes a little umbrella and beach chair. Okay. And I mean, the water is warm. You can go out very far and still be below your waist. And it's just, you know, it's very pleasant. It's just a nice beach day.
And again, more European tourists here than American.
We didn't see any American tourists. People kept on asking, where are you from? Thinking we were Albanian American visiting family. But when they found we didn't have any family here, they even questioned why. It's not really popular with American tourists. Most American tourists seem to be going to Croatia.
Which is a beautiful country. But Albania doesn't look too shabby either.
No, and it's also not as crowded, mm-hmm. which is nice. I mean, and like there are tourists. I mean, there's plenty of German tourists and Dutch tourists and Italians. So there are tourists. It's just for whatever reason, Americans haven't discovered it yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, we're talking about the same coastline as Croatia or Montenegro, just a little further south. So probably the water is warmer.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then from Durres, so we just spent one night there because we needed to stop someplace.
It was your beach stop, so you weren't there to see the castle or the medieval ruins or that sort of thing?
No, I mean, there is in Durres itself, there is a Roman amphitheater that you can visit. We just chose not to. We knew we were going to other ruins for down south. But from there, we continued south. Our final destination the next day was Gjirokastër, which is known as the City of Stone and has one of their most famous writers, Ismail Kadare, whose books have been all translated into English. It's kind of where he's from and it has a very long history. And it's very picturesque, the way the homes are built into the side of the mountain. But before we got there, we stopped in a place called Apollonia, which was a little hard to find. While I said the roads are really good and there's all these new highways, there seems to have been a dispute when you get to this city of fear that they were building the highway and then they found some ancient ruins, some additional ones. So they stopped construction. So the highway kind of stops and you get onto local roads. I had to ask a few times, but we got to Apollonia and it's old ruins. There's a Byzantine church there. And then there's ruins that go back to Roman times. And then there's a great museum there that has artifacts that date back to BC and also from the first and second century. And I mean, you find little glass bottles and really delicate pieces that are from the second century. So it was really very interesting. Not a lot of tourists at all. You basically have the place to yourself. And then there's a place you can eat, have some lunch, and you're like on top of a mountain top, just overlooking this valley. And it's really worth the stop. I mean, there are tours that go there, so mm-hmm. it's not like it's hard to find. It doesn't seem to be mentioned in tour books.
This is Apollonia?
Apollonia, yeah.
Interesting.
Sometimes it's mentioned and sometimes it isn't.
Interesting, because it looks to be a town over 2,600 years old.
Yeah, I don't know. I forget when it came back. I mean, they talk about that people would look out at the sea from where it was. But when you're at Apollonia, you feel so far from any water body. But I guess 2,600 years ago, maybe the water came in.
Mm-hmm.
It was very interesting.
Well, and that's often why these towns are preserved, is that they've lost their ports. A familiar story. It's what happened with Ephesus in what is now Turkey. It's what happened with Bruges in Belgium, although 1,000 years later, their river silts up and they lose their port, and therefore they don't have the money to replace what was there with the newer style, whether that newer style be modern or be Middle Ages or whatever.
Right, exactly. And I think also the fact that it's not easy to find mm-hmm. probably also has helped it. There aren't tons of tourists. Although when we were leaving, there was a tourist bus that pulled up. So, you know, people are going there.
I was just in Rome. So a tourist bus sounds like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, you're never fighting crowds ever, which is nice. And also it's very reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
The entrance to these museums is a few dollars. Children are usually free. You get, like I said, you get the place to yourself. And everything is also in English. So you know what's going on and you can read about it as well. And they've done a very good job at documenting everything.
Excellent. And you were on your way to
Gjirokastër.
This is going to be a great episode for people to take advantage of the show notes, where I've already looked up how to spell all of these different city names.
If you speak Albanian or if you know the alphabet in Albanian, you can pronounce any word. But mm-hmm. to an American, a lot of the words seem like a lot of consonants that don't go together. But Gjirokastër is beautiful. And there's also a castle there that is definitely worth visiting. And a lot of the hotels also provide a tour of the castle for you. We stayed in a really lovely hotel, which was an old house, like a traditional Albanian or Gjirokastrian house, which has just magnificent woodwork and tapestries and rugs. And what was also nice was the hotel where we stayed, they had a special, what they call isopolyphonic concert. They had, it's a traditional way of singing, men from the area dressed in the traditional Albanian dress of their villages. Basically, it's a cappella. There's no instruments.
Okay.
And they sing, and it's mesmerizing. The songs are always of stories of loves or defeats or stories of woe or celebration. But it was a great concert that they did, especially for the guests of the hotel. And Gjirokastër is known for a big folkloric festival that they hold every year. I forget when it is. I think it's probably in the fall. But they've held on to a lot of these folkloric traditions. And you see that in the architecture as well. And all the roads are of stone and the homes and just very unique.
I'm still trying to look up what the root is maybe for isopolyphony.
Maybe it's different. I don't know what it means.
Yeah, I have some information about it that I'll include in the show notes, but I still don't have a clear definitional picture of what it is. But it is fairly easy to find in terms of YouTube videos, so you can hear samples of it, for instance, and I'll include some examples in the show notes.
Right, and I can send you some video of this, of what it sounded like as well, if that helps.
Excellent.
So Gjirokastër, it's also a very nice city just to stroll around. There isn't a lot there to see. Apart from the castle, Ismail Kadare, you can go visit his home. There's some tourist areas, but really it's just interesting just to walk around and you can spend the day there. The following day, we continued our paths south. Our destination was an area called Drimades, which is along the Ionian coast.
So southern Albania coast.
It's southern, but it's actually north of Gjirokastër.
Okay.
The problem is the mountains. So you have to go south in order to go back north along the coast.
Okay.
So you have to basically go through the mountains. There is a town of Saranda, which is the southernmost city. And near outside of Saranda is, it's actually a UNESCO site called Butrint that you can visit. We decided not to go there because we had gone to Apollonia. But you can definitely do that. And that's a very large site that's still being excavated even now. And it has amphitheater and lots of ruins from, I guess it was Roman times. But you can actually now, you can bypass Saranda with the highway. And Saranda is a kind of a crowded beach city. And we were going more to a smaller town.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically cut through the mountains and headed up to Drimades. But before you hit Drimades, there's also an area that also doesn't really get a lot of mention in tourist books, although every Albanian knows about it, and it's called the Bluest Eye. And it's a natural water source. It's very dry in that area. And then there's kind of this oasis of blue-green water. Even the dragonflies were blue. I mean, you feel like you've like entered into this magical area. Really, the color of the water is just, you don't see that many places.
It looks like special effects from the picture that I'm looking at.
It does. Something it does. From a movie. Exactly. But it's worth stopping. It's a nice place to stop for lunch. And that's really what we did. So it kind of breaks up the trip. And it's already on your way there. You know, you go a little bit out, maybe like 10 minutes out of your way because you have to go on a dirt road to get there. But again, it's definitely worth it to see because there aren't many places like that. And then from there, we continued up the coast. The Albanian coast is also called the Albanian Riviera.
Mm-hmm.
You have this, you know, bright sea. The Ionian Sea is much bluer than even the Adriatic. And then you have the mountains right behind you. So again, it's these mountainous roads. There's lots of curves and twists, but you're on a major road, so it's easy to navigate. You know, you pass through small towns, small beach towns, some that feel very far from the beach that are high above, mm-hmm. and some that are closer down. And so our destination was Dreymades, which is a relatively new beach and not as developed as some of the other areas. There's Himar, which is popular. There's Chaparro. There's Thermi. We were basically outside of Thermi in this area. It wasn't even on the map.
I was going to say, I'm not even finding it. So I feel better.
I mean, it was funny because I knew we were going to be driving and I was a little bit worried about the roads since I had a very different memory of what the roads were like. Mm-hmm. And I ordered this road map, which was like basically what must be like a military map or something. It was massive. It was very difficult to fold, you know, as in the passenger seat. It was just gigantic. And it wasn't even on that map. But people do know it, and there are signs for it, and there are hotels there. And
it's closest to Thermi?
It's closest to Thermi. Okay. Yeah. It's basically like right outside of Thermi.
Mm-hmm.
The beach isn't as crowded. You know, somebody had told us about it, but it's becoming more and more popular. And even as we were there, you can see there's new restaurants going up and new hotels being built. The hotels are maybe two or three floors. You don't have really high hotels like you see kind of like in Spain or
sure.
Italy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very pleasant. I mean, it's beach. If you like the beach, it's a great place to just relax and hang out. There are water sports that you can do. You can rent jet skis if you like. You can go paragliding.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of water sports around if you want to do that. It's the beach.
Mm-hmm.
It's very popular with Albanians, especially I was told like after July 15th, between July 15th and August, everybody goes to the beach. So when we were there, it was right before that. So it wasn't quite as crowded. But I was told in a week or two, it would be packed.
Well, and that implies for me that the weather is such that you want to flee the cities and go to the beach. When is the best time to go to Albania? You've spent some time there.
I always think the fall is nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite so hot. I mean, Albania is very temperate. It never gets really cold. Most days are sunny. They boast about the most sunny days. One of the countries that has most of the sunny days of the year.
Hmm.
If you're looking to go to the beach, obviously you'd go in June, July, in the summer months. But if you're looking to go to the other areas, I mean, there's areas that I didn't even talk about that are in eastern Albania, like Korça and Përmet, where you can go rafting, and there's lots of old cities, also very picturesque. And I was told, like, you can't go there, do those activities in the summer because everything's kind of dried up. But the spring and the fall are good for those areas. There's also Pogradets, which is the border with Macedonia, which is on the lake, and that's beautiful as well. I guess the winter is probably the hardest time to go because it's harder to go north because of the snow and extreme temperatures. But I mean, Albania is very temperate. So I would say anytime spring through late fall are easy to go there. It just depends on what you're looking to do. And what's interesting about Albania, if your interest is history, if your interest is hiking, if it's water sports, if it's just exploring a place that's not on everybody's radar, it really has something for everyone. And the driving is easy. My husband was saying, in just a short amount of time to see this amount of scenery, you'd have to cross the entire United States.
Yeah, a little different scale there.
You see the mountains, you see the ocean, you see rivers, mm-hmm. you see cities, you see everything, and it's all very condensed. When I was first in Albania, we used to joke because we would travel by bus, by public transportation. One of my friends had, and it would take forever to get places because the roads weren't so good. And they would say, it takes so long because they want to make you think it's a bigger country than it is. It's really worth a visit. And, you know, a lot of people have been asking me about it since our trip.
And is that the end of your itinerary there at the beach?
Pretty much, yeah. From there, we went back to Tirana. Had we had more time, obviously there's places that we could have visited, but we only had so much time.
So Albania has this shared history with the rest of the Balkans and also this unique history. Where would you go to if you wanted to see something quintessentially Albanian, something that you're not going to see elsewhere, but only are going to see in Albania?
Gjirokastër, there's also a city called Berat, which we didn't go to. They call it the City of Windows. And it's similar to Gjirokastër. It's a little bit closer to Tirana, but it has a lot of a mixture of Byzantine churches and the old architecture. So I would say you definitely visit Berat or Gjirokastër because they're just those traditional Albanian cities that you can see. But they're not cities that you necessarily spend days in.
Okay. And then Berat is not only one of the world's longest inhabited cities, but also a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Correct.
What's going to surprise me about Albania? It seems like when we talked about it before, there would be more surprising, but now it's had some time to catch up and to be a little more similar with some of the other countries in the area. So even now, what's still going to surprise me about going to Albania?
Obviously, there's a lot of modern elements to Albania, mm-hmm. but there's also still a lot of the old. For example, when we went to Kruja, again, with my gigantic map, it showed a road that didn't exist anymore. And we went down this road and all of a sudden it became dirt and pebbles and there was nobody. And then we kind of came upon a villager and, you know, we felt like you were thrown back 100 years, man herding his sheep with a few teeth in his mouth, but, you know, still wanting to help us in any which way he could. So you can have the modern, and mm-hmm. then all of a sudden you take a path and you're back in the old Albania, and you never know when that's going to happen. While there are a lot of modern influences and mm-hmm. there's new buildings, there's still a lot of the old, and that's what gives it its charm. And I hope it never loses, frankly, because it represents who they are.
With all the spots you talked about, if I tell you you're standing at the prettiest spot, where are you standing and what are you looking at?
You've hiked all day.
So we're up in the north.
You're up in the north. Yeah, you've hiked all day and you're just looking out the mountains and the valley, you know, the valley and just...
And the accursed mountains.
The accursed mountains, yeah. And then all of a sudden you hear like the bell of a cow in the distance, or you hear kind of sheep coming up the road, but no person in sight. And it's just quiet and beautiful.
Before we get to our wrap-up questions, what else should we know before we go to Albania?
Just that you're going to a place that is still adjusting and has gone through tremendous change. Mm-hmm. And just as you are curious about Albania, people are also curious about you. So people will ask you questions and they will ask you maybe some personal questions. And just be, you know, people want to understand you, especially when you go out of the urban areas and people aren't so used to meeting foreigners or haven't met as many foreigners. Mm-hmm. They're curious. Be open to talking to people. And then they'll be your friend. They'll take you under their arm. Funny story where we did this hike. We were up north and we wound up at the end of the hike and there was a house there. And we were told there was a villager's house and we could ask him because we didn't bring lunch with us. And we asked if they would make lunch. And obviously you pay for the lunch.
Sure.
And they made us this fabulous lunch and just opened their home to us. We were very patient because, you know, it took a while to make that meal. Couldn't be on a schedule. But we waited and we were patient and enjoyed it and tried talking to them. And as we were leaving, the temperature had dropped. And they said, oh, you're not prepared to go back down. Here, take our jackets. And they gave me a jacket. They gave our kids sweaters. My husband, like a little too small shirt because he was much bigger than they were. And they said, just take it. They had like nothing, not like they had excess clothing. Mm-hmm. And they said, just take it. You need it. We'll find a way to get it back. Just leave it with so-and-so down in the village below. There aren't many people who would do that. It was just very special and very memorable.
Excellent.
And kept us warm.
You mentioned guidebooks. What guidebook do you recommend for Albania?
There aren't any recent guidebooks.
Okay. I was wondering, because it's a country that's changed a lot. Yeah.
And I think the latest one that I could find was from 2011 or 12.
Okay.
And I considered getting it, and then it wasn't current. Mm-hmm. I mean, the best thing is actually just looking online. The Albanian tour groups, I mean, they're all on Facebook, they're on Instagram. Mm-hmm. You can get a lot of information online, but actually printed guidebooks, there isn't anything current. But you can find a lot of resources online, and that's also the best way to kind of figure out your itinerary too, because they all post on Instagram and you see these breathtaking pictures and you say, oh, you know, where's that and how do I get there? And, you know, you find the tour or the place and you figure out a way to get there. There's lots of information when you get to Tirana. I found there was actually more tourist information there than you can find here in the U.S.
One thing that makes you laugh and say, only in Albania.
Well, like the giving of their clothing and just knowing that they would get it back and looking out for us, almost like being our parents, making sure that we're okay. You don't find many places where you're a tourist and the local community will kind of take you under their arm and want to protect you like you're their child.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize your trip to Albania in just three words, what three words would you use?
Breathtaking.
Okay.
Depending where you are. Unpredictable.
Okay.
And welcoming.
Excellent. Any more examples of unpredictable that you haven't mentioned?
Not right now. I can't think of anything right now.
Okay.
There is a place that I forgot to mention that everyone in Albania knows about, and it's also not written about. And it also has to do with the food scene in Albania, because there's a growing food movement or slow food movement in Albania.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a place that we stopped on our way north. We spent a night there, and it was a place called Mrizi Izanove, and it's an agro-tourism air place. And it's in a small town or small village outside of town called Lej. And the chef worked in, I think, some Michelin restaurants in Europe. A lot of the chefs in a lot of these restaurants trained outside of Albania because they left 25 years ago for better opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've come back to either their hometowns or their villages, and they've set up these wonderful places. And this Mrizi Izanove is a restaurant, and you can also stay there, but it's basic farm to table, which is a little overused, at least here in Brooklyn. But they really look at the history of Albanian food and culture and bring that to the cuisine. So they take traditional dishes and traditional ways of making cheeses and different cuisines. It's really a special place. As you're eating, we ate outside, they bring you a tomato plant that you pick your tomato to go along with your fresh cheese plate. And I mean, everything is just fresh. I mean, that's the other thing is the food in Albania, everything is fresh.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of fruits and vegetables and meats and fish, and it's all peak. It's all ripe. Even when you go to the beach, I mean, here when you go to the beach, there's junk food. And there you have people coming with grapes and plums and cherries and all sorts of fresh fruits and vegetables and fresh grilled corn. You can't buy junk food along the beach. You can buy fresh fruit. And for the foodies, it's also a place to explore. And Tirana itself has some excellent restaurants. And prices can't be beat. I mean, what you pay in Tirana for a top-notch meal doesn't compare to what you would pay in New York. You pay maybe like $50, $60 a person at most. And you get an excellent meal, whereas here it's hundreds of dollars.
Our guest again has been Dina Rabner from Brooklyn, not from Albania. But you'd think that she's from Albania because she seems to have left a piece of her heart there. Dina, thank you for coming on the show and sharing with us your love for Albania.
Thank you.
In News of the Community, I heard from Jack about the episode we did on the Yukon, who said, "Hi, Chris, really enjoyed that episode, have been to the Yukon 3 times, but your host neglected to mention the infamous ritual of the sourdough cocktail in Dawson City. More than 100,000 folks of all ages and from all over the world have done the drink with an actual mummified human toe in it since 1973. Google it. I saw it, but declined. Anyway, thanks for all your podcasts. Keep them coming. I've listened to every one. Best regards, Jack." Yeah, Jack, I am very well aware of that. In fact, pretty much every press trip the Yukon has done until this one has involved going up and drinking the cocktail with the mummified human toe in there and letting you have to let the toe touch your lips to get credit. Yeah, I don't think I would have done it either. They have multiple toes, by the way, and occasionally they lose one because someone will swallow one, usually on purpose. There's a fine for that. And other people will leave their toes in their will to this particular place. And it's all a very strange thing. And you're right, we didn't mention it. I heard from Randy on the Amateur Traveler Podcast Facebook page. And Randy said, I always enjoy the podcast, but I especially enjoyed this episode of a car trip exploring the Lofoten Islands of northern Norway. I listened while viewing the accompanying photos in the advanced iTunes version. Always glad to hear that somebody's using that because it takes me a lot of time to put that in, and followed along on the journey with an online interactive map of the area. I certainly would love to do this trip someday, you and me both, Randy. My only time in Norway was a few days in Oslo. The buildings of this region reminded me of those I've seen in Greenland and Iceland. Great episode. Thanks to guest David Nichol for sharing, and Chris, our beloved and hardworking host. Well, thanks so much to you as well, Randy. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. We got one more person signed up for the trip to India. It is getting to be pretty much the last minute at this point, but we still have some slots if you're wanting to go with us. And for more information, go to amateurtraveler.com/India2017. If you're listening to this in 2018, you missed it. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.